B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once successfully convinced our receptionist that even par was a Swedish pop star, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. This week, professional golf finds itself in a weird double. On one hand, you have the European Tour, but with the participation of such luminaries in the game as Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, and Phil Mickelson playing in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. After the controversial death of the American reporter Jamal Khashoggi last year, any participation of any kind in Saudi Arabia, much less a tournament in Saudi Arabia, must be morally questioned. Then you have the PGA Tour making their annual stop at the TPC Scottsdale and the Waste Management Open in Phoenix. This is the tournament with the infamous 16th hole, now fully enclosed by the gallery. It's like a hole with stadium seating all the way around, near 30,000 raucous fans that make hockey hooligans seem tame. Look, I'm not going to be that guy. I'm actually on the side of this. This is fine. This is great. This one week out of the year. My problem is that Phoenix has wrought copycats on tour, specifically in Florida at the Honda. You'll see it in a few weeks. Again, it's fine in Phoenix this one week out of the year. I don't want to see this every week. On the show this week, we're kind of all over the place. Ryan Ballingy of GolfNewsNet.com hops on to chat about the PGA merchandise show that went on last week in Orlando and all that's new and interesting coming out in the game. Kendall Alley works with Wells Fargo. Specifically, he works directly with sponsorship of the Wells Fargo Championship. I wanted to talk with him this week about how a couple of things work. Tournament sponsorship and the moving of venues as it relates not only to our tournament here, but more specifically, to the fiasco that has become the AT&T Byron Nelson in Dallas. And we'll wrap things up with a fun conversation we had last year with country superstar Clay Walker. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am is next week, and he's a fixture at that event. We talk about that experience and so much more. So let's go ahead. Let's get rolling with what went down at the PGA Merchandise Show from GolfNewsNet.com. This is Ryan Ballingy. Ryan, how many years is it now that you've been going down to the PGA Merchandise Show? Because if there's one thing I've learned over the years, people that go, it's become an annual pilgrimage.
I don't know. I don't have. I've lost track of the official number, but I think I first went in 2008 and probably skipped a couple of years in there. So let's say somewhere between 10 and 12 times I've been.
Now, how soon do you go down? Do you go down early for demo day and all of that, or what's your schedule?
That's kind of changed over time. I mean, I used to go for maybe a couple of days, just maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. Tuesday is demo day. Maybe a day of meetings on Wednesday and go home. And over time, as I've kind of made more friends in the industry, I go on Sunday night and I leave on Friday to get max time to hang out with people. It's as much a social affair as anything.
This year at the merchandise show, I'm just observing from afar. There's been many years and some in recent times that as I'm watching on TV and watching online coverage, everybody seems to be sort of downbeat and sort of downtrodden and beat up in the golf industry. I got a sort of a positive vibe this year coming off of the PGA Merchandise Show. Was that just my imagination or was that something you witnessed in person?
I don't know that I witnessed it in person. I mean, there's always this game that people in my line of work and pretty much everyone that goes to the show plays the first day, and they try to figure out, well, what's the traffic like compared to last year? And we all act like our memories are crystal clear, and then inevitably someone says, well, I think it's better, and someone else says, well, I think it's worse. And no one really knows the answer because it's not like they give you real statistics. But I do feel like the show has gotten smaller and quieter over the years. Now, part of the reason this year was the weather forecast was known to be bad on Tuesday and on Wednesday of the show week. So demo day was not going to be a whole lot of fun, and Wednesday it was not going to be a whole lot of fun to go out and play golf. But people knew Thursday was going to be good. So people cut out super early on Thursday to go play some golf, which, hey, good for them. But I do feel like there was less skepticism, less pessimism about the state of the industry. I think people have realized golf isn't in free fall anymore. that the market has kind of leveled it out, maybe, and there's maybe a little bit of room to grow. So I think that there's generally some optimism about the spirit of golf, about where golf participation is, but also that the economy's been in decent shape for a decade now, so it's not like we're doomed to go into some massive recession again very soon, fingers crossed.
Ryan Ballingy of the Golf News, GolfNewsNet.com is our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about last week's PGA merchandise show down in Orlando. You said that the show has gotten smaller over the years in terms of just size. Has it increased in terms of a variety or number of different kinds of vendors?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think your core vendors are there from the equipment manufacturing side. TaylorMade has walked away from the show in the last couple of years. But some others have come back. Mizuno has come back. Bridgestone has come back. It feels like the big boys are there. And they're not necessarily there to write orders. Those days are done for them. But they're there to show kind of a sign of solidarity and things are going well and to kind of flash about a little bit. I do feel, though, that the apparel side of the show still is very important to those manufacturers and companies. There's a lot of kind of stroll-by business that can walk in off the street, so to speak, just walking along the show floor, see something they like, and maybe write an order or two. And I've talked to a number of companies, particularly small, mid-sized companies, that feel like it's still a big deal for them. It's still worth the ROI of buying a booth, setting it all up, putting in the man hours, and putting in the time to be an exhibitor. And then kind of somewhere in between, you kind of have all the stalwarts of the golf industry, where you have people who provide website design or those signs that you see on the course. Like, all those things seem to be kind of holding steady and fine, and they're always going to be a key part of it. So I don't think that the show is all that helpful for the big boys, but maybe for the apparel side of things and smaller companies, it can't be.
You mentioned that TaylorMade is no longer a part of the show. At one point or another, it seems like all these companies go through massive flux in terms of ownership and cutbacks and whatnot. But that does surprise me that TaylorMade is not there. Is there an explanation?
Yeah, so when TaylorMade was acquired a couple of years ago by a private equity firm from the previous ownership, which was Adidas Group, they wanted to cut some costs. And ultimately, the game of venture capital is to buy something, clear out all the muck and grime, and then resell it for more than you paid for it. And so opportunities to cut some costs for them are significant. I mean, they were spending easy in the seven figures for the TaylorMade brand as a PGA merchandise show. And again, what were they getting out of it except sexy booth space that people could come out check out clubs? But they weren't writing orders. They were doing that business back in terms of what they were getting from the PGA merchandise show. So they just decided, you know what? We don't need to come here and tell people about our equipment. We can release it. We can do it on TV. We can do it a zillion different ways instead of spending seven figures and being here. And that's their prerogative. Now, if and when the day comes, the venture capital firm that owns them decides, you know what, we're ready, we're going to unload this thing, then maybe the new ownership decides to come back. But at least in the short term, I think that's just the decision that they have made.
Ryan Ballingy of thegolfnewsnet.com is our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about the PGA merchandise show last week in Orlando. You used a phrase that I hadn't heard in a long time, and it made me smile, writing orders at the PGA merchandise show. In the years where you still had the Edwin Wattses of the world and the Golf Smiths of the world, and there were lots of big box store and retail box store outlets that had, 75 to 200 stores across the United States, there was indeed a great deal of order writing and a great deal of business that was done by these companies at the merchandise show. What would you say the percentage of business they attribute now to online versus doing business with a Dick's or a PGA Tour superstore is?
I wish I could give you a good breakdown. I mean, I can kind of guess, but I do feel like, and this is just from personal experience of looking at how we move equipment when we do sales and link out the things through Golf News Net, as I still think a lot of the business, particularly in those hard goods and golf clubs, actual golf clubs, almost all of that is, I still feel, done in person. I mean, not 100% and not 50%. I would guess 75% of it is done in person.
Because I think that's fair.
We've promoted fitting so heavily. We want people to get fit. Golf clubs are the one thing I feel like you've got to hit, you've got to experience before you buy them. But on those softer goods, on golf balls, on accessories, on bags, I feel like more people are willing to go online, try something out. You only have to get one. If you don't like it, you don't need to get it again. So there's more of a proliferation of that for consumers in online shopping and that facet of the business. And then maybe you get closer to 30, 35% instead of 20, 25%. But I still do think a lot of golf is done at a transactional, hand-to-hand, personal level. Even with more businesses coming that are strictly done online, they cut out the middleman, so to speak, they still have a hard time taking hold because, frankly, the sports business model is still very much a traditional one.
Ryan, there's usually universal themes at these shows. It seems like the companies all have the same ideas at the same times, whether it be adjustability of golf clubs was a big theme a few years ago, or someone had made a breakthrough with golf ball technology, and it seemed like everyone had new golf ball technology that was big breakthrough. Did you see a universal theme among the big companies in hard goods this year?
Not necessarily. I think we're still kind of in this place where we're still waiting for the next big breakthrough to come. And frankly, part of that has to do with the realities of the USGA sandbox. So a lot of the advances that we see at golf clubs now, particularly in drivers and fairway woods, it's on the margins, like literally on the margins of the club face, being more forgiving. It's delivering more consistent ball speeds no matter where you hit it. So it may not, you can't make those outrageous claims anymore of 17 more yards or 27 more yards with this driver. That's first of all, not true. And second of all, not realistic. But it's a more nuanced story. We say, well, if you hit the ball on the toe or you hit it on the heel, maybe you give up 5 yards instead of 20 yards like you used to. Maybe you get a little less spin. You know, you don't spin it as much, doesn't spin out of control. Or you get a little bit more spin and you kind of save it a little bit. Those are the types of advances you see in driver. Weight placement is huge in irons. And just frankly, the advances that we got from drivers in the 2010s are finding their way increasingly into irons. There's a distance chase in irons. They're stronger lofts, but they launch higher. They've pursued material so that for people who have more moderate, aka slow swing speeds, they can still get some distance. As golf's population has aged, those players want to still hit it about as far as they do, and they don't care if the lofts are stronger. They just want to be able to say they hit their 9-iron like they did when they were 40 if they're 60. And so there's been some push there. I think in footwear, we've seen a move toward talking about the modern golf swing. I've seen it from a number of companies this year in their releases, talking about the desire for stability for golfers to use the ground to generate power. Think of what you will of that swing philosophy, but it has become increasingly pervasive, and they want to market around it to a number of golfers. So I feel like there's little message tweaks here and there, depending on the product that you're talking about, but they're small. They're not big overarching changes that everyone's kind of in a rush to accept.
Ryan Ballinger, the golfnewsnet.com, our guest taking Dead Aim, talking PGA merchandise show, a burgeoning market in terms of just number of retailers that I see online and I saw on television and online as well during the coverage of the merchandise show is I call it the accessories market. It seems there's just more and more companies doing ball markers and doing head covers and whatnot. Did you see anything in the accessories market or a new player that you thought, wow, that's interesting?
No, I mean, yes and no. I feel like there's been some push in apparel toward maybe more sport-driven look. I mean, that's kind of something we've always had this push and pull with in recent memory. I think Adidas is really pushing the envelope in that front, and they've kind of been very forward saying, look, we don't want to look like golf equipment, traditional golf apparel, the way that everyone else does. And I think that's somewhat refreshing. I think in the apparel, or excuse me, in the kind of accessories marketplace, I just think there's more of a drive toward that artisan look, towards something that looks like it was handmade or that was in fact handmade. Just those little pieces, those little differences, those one-of-a-kind type things, even if they're one of 10,000 that can look unique every time you play it. So I think about the stuff that Seamus Golf does. I think about what Stitch Golf out of North Carolina is doing. They've created a program with their PGA professionals so that at a club level, they can walk their members through a highly customized process of developing head covers for them. There's more customization golf bags than ever. And I think that that's where people are trying to get with that side of things, where you can make stuff truly yours or at least feel like it's something that was made just for you.
get you out of here on this, as you were walking around while you were at the merchandise show, give me one, two, or three things that you saw that really caught your eye, and you're like, okay, this is really cool. I don't know if it'll ever catch on. I don't know if we'll ever see it pervasive in the marketplace, but just seeing that someone came up with this, this is pretty cool.
I wish there were more of the. I mean, there used to be more of these stories of the PGA show where someone just showed me, like, hey, good for you. Like, you put your life and you put your money on the line. I try to look for success stories. Maybe that's just because I like to think that Golf News Net is a similar success story that came from not much to get to where it is. And so I've connected with a few different guys and brands over the years. I think about Axis One, that they finally signed Justin Rose to a putter deal. They've made this putter that has, you know, the perfect center of gravity alignment to kind of hit exactly where your ball strikes. And it's a technology that's worked for me when I've used it, and it works for other players, but they never really kind of had that validation. And last year, they finally got it with Justin Rose working with them. Now he's on the staff. So that feels like a big leap forward for them. Swannies is another brand I've got to know. They started out, I think it was 2015, we met for the first time, and they were just guys with a backpack with golf sandals walking around the show floor telling people about it. And now they're a full-fledged apparel line doing really well for themselves. They run a lot of fun events. They're just four guys that decided they were going to do this, and they've made it happen. The one, I think, equipment piece that I did see that I didn't know about before was a company called Awesome Golf. And it's made by a gentleman in the United Kingdom. His son liked to play golf, and he wanted to get him used to playing simulator golf so they could practice in poor weather. And his young son hated it because simulator software wasn't built for young kids. It was built for accomplished golfers, and it wasn't fun. It was kind of boring. So he kind of built game software. He does that for a living, built game software to work with a simulator so his son could have chipping games and practice games and a course with tees that he could play from, and so he could have a good time. And I love that idea because I think it should extend to more people. We think so much about the diehard golfer when we talk about the industry and when we talk about the money sources in this industry. And that's absolutely true. But to get more people involved with the game, you've got to make it accessible and you have to make it fun. And I love that idea.
See, I'm with you. I think that the simulator market is a market that, with a little tweaking, could really be over-the-top successful. The problem is the price point is just so high that it eliminates everybody. If you can get that price point down to where it's a quality product that's fun to play, that you can actually improve and get something out of, and you can get that price point between $2,000 and $5,000 instead of, you know, $10,000 to $20,000, I think it'll really, really catch on.
And I think that's starting to take hold. I've worked with a couple of different companies in the simulator sales space. I haven't talked to Foresight Sports, which obviously you start to think about Foresight, and you think, all right, this is going to cost me a lot of money. And they said, well, we have this kind of simulator kit in a box, effectively. You kind of get the GC Quad, which is their top-of-the-line launch monitor, or you can get the previous generation one step down. You get a projector. You get screens. You get all this set up. And they're like, we can get it as low as like $5,000 for you now with a world-class product.
Wow.
So I think there is a recognition that depending on what you want, depending on your space, depending on your budget, there is an opportunity there in that simulator space to get a lot of people interested, get into homes, get people thinking about golf year-round, especially when they can't play. And I think there's a frontier there yet that hasn't been fully discovered, and it's going to be big in the coming years.
His website is one of the best for golf lovers. If you hadn't checked it out, go to golfnewsnet.com. That's Ryan Ballingy. Up next, Kendall Alley of Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship takes Dead Aim at tournament sponsorship, tournament venue moving, and more. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Kendall Alley works with Wells Fargo, and specifically the Wells Fargo Championship, when it comes to sponsorship. But what's on his business card? All right, Mr. Alley, I have you as the Chairman of the Board for Education and Regional President at Wells Fargo. That is a magnificent title. In layman's terms, what do you do?
So I am actually a regional president and run our retail operations for Wells Fargo here, but my other job in the company is I'm responsible for the Wells Fargo Championship, and I'm chairman of the board of Champions for Education, which is the host organization whose responsibility it is to put the tournament on.
Fantastic. You are the perfect person to talk about this. I've been fascinated with what's gone down in Dallas with the AT&T Byron Nelson in recent weeks. So let me start with just some basic overview sponsor questions. In terms of sponsor agreements, whether it be AT&T or in your case, Wells Fargo, is there a standard 5-year, 8-year, 10-year contract and commitment, or does it vary place to place and tournament to tournament?
I think it varies by sponsor to sponsor. We have been historically a 5-year kind of look at, out in the future. I think we've done 1 6-year deal, but it's been 5 years at a time just, to know kind of what we were doing and where we were going. We have seen some 10-year deals. And we've seen some, 1 and 2 year deals from folks. So I think it a little depends on what you're trying to get out of the tournament, sort of where the tournament is in its lifeline. Is it early and growing, or is it, a sustaining one and that you've got to put continuing energy into? We've been very fortunate here that our energy has been really good, so we've been able to sustain for 20 years. But some tournaments aren't having that luxury, so the sponsors look at it as to, what it kind of fits with their business line. And I think it's more that as much as it is what the tour recommends.
I was going to ask that very question. The tour, their involvement, would they prefer a certain number, or do they leave that strictly up to the sponsors and the tournament organizers?
They would like the longer the better, so that they know for sure what their schedule looks like in each year. And if you look around, you'll see announcements every year. So every year, some number of tournaments is coming up for renewal, and so they're constantly having to think through that. And new events have jumped in. A couple of years ago, a Korean event came in with a 78-person field with a $9 million purse that kind of came out of the wasn't in existence and was created. So there's cities will find a club that's very interested in having a tournament, so they'll work to get on the tour schedule. And this past year was when the PGA Tour changed the schedule, which moved some tournaments around. We were very fortunate at Wells Fargo to keep our dates to the first week of May, but some other tournaments have had to move around, and that's been positive for some and not so positive for others.
Kendall Alley is with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Once that agreement is put into motion and it's going, how far into it do discussions begin as to furthering that relationship or giving notice that, we're going to be backing out of this?
The last two that I've worked on here for us, we've kind of begun 2 years out to start thinking about what we're looking at. So we get into year four, basically, or year three, and start thinking about, all right, here we go, the fourth year of the tournament, the fifth year of the tournament, what do we need to do? In our specific instance, in both of our last two renewals, there's been needs for us to move the tournament because of other opportunities at Quahala Club. And so we've had to be a little earlier, let's say, in that conversation to make sure that we're, thinking through all the parameters of what it takes to get there. And so usually it's a year or two out, and, by a year out, you really want to announce, let's say in the 2020 tournament, that what's going to happen in 21, so you keep your momentum.
Mr. Alley, it's no secret. These sponsorships, these are big bucks, no whammies agreements that are in place. When you're Wells Fargo or you're AT&T or you're any of these title sponsors, what are you looking to get out of it? What are you looking to see that says, okay, we got the bang for our buck here? Because there's a lot of buck involved.
No question. So one of the things there's a couple of things that we really focus on. The first one is it's an opportunity to spread our brand, over a national and international platform with the game of golf. It reaches a certain dynamic, which is, usually CEO types, others that enjoy the game. And so you get a chance to kind of, tell your message. We think that the Wells Fargo Championship here at Quahala portrays the kind of company we want to be and what we want to do when we engage with customers. We also host, and this is a public number, we host about 4,000 clients through the course of the week, whether that be local or folks that come in to enjoy the tournament. And, we found from that particular time that, folks tell us that's probably as positive a week as we have at Wells Fargo with people around the way they feel about the company. And here, locally in Charlotte, one of the things that's exciting about it is the opportunity to, reinvest charitable dollars created by the tournament. We're up over $23 million so far. So we get a chance to, reinvest into our community. And it's an all-around good opportunity for everyone as we think through, why we would want to do it and the fun and excitement of being around it.
All right, super. Now we can get into some specifics. Kendall Alley is with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. For years, the Byron Nelson event was held successfully at the TPC at Las Colinas in Dallas. Then a couple of years ago, it had a much ballyhooed move to Trinity Forest. At the time, it was thought to be something of a unique facet to the tournament schedule, an Inland Link-style course where you lived and died by bounces and the rub of the green, as the Scots would say. How much, if any, say, does the sponsor have in a move like this? Now, we'll get to the one you guys made to go to Eagle Point a year ago. We'll get to that in a second. But a move like this, how much input does a sponsor have, and do they have veto power?
Yes, at least my agreement. And so the process that I would say is we would be, you know, discussing in agreement any change around the process of the tournament itself. You know, we've been very fortunate, as an example, to have Quahala Club as a partner, and they've had tremendous changes and processes with the golf course here. And because of the leadership of Johnny Harrison, I don't have a need from Wells Fargo's standpoint to have anything to do with how the golf course is being set up or worked on.
Right.
Because we have a great leader in Johnny that's got great experience and expertise. If I were sitting at a club that, let's say, is more resort type or, you know, public structure or, you know, has change of leadership, and, you know, I would want to have more control. And for sure, if they said, hey, you're going to have to move. And, you know, we can get into talking about our decisions. But when we did that, you know, we took the lead. We asked the tour for advice, but we took the lead on the places we wanted to be. How would it expose our tournament and how would it feel? You know, the one that, you know, as I look at the one in Dallas, Las Colinas was, you know, known forever. You know, who knows why the driving force behind making the move, but it's very interesting that a couple of years later they're saying, hey, maybe not quite as good as we thought, and let's kind of go back and see what we got. You know, all the time in this business, you're always trying to be better next year than you were this year, and sometimes you can outthink yourself.
Now, realize we're dealing with a unicorn. People don't realize what a unicorn we're dealing with when we talk about Quahala Club and Johnny Harris, but we really are. And your experience is probably skewed and your bias is skewed because of this. But would you think in your experience that it would be easier to deal with a private facility rather than a public facility because of that?
I think part of the thing that makes Quahala Club so unique and so amazing is the vision of Johnny Harris and the way that he has worked with the membership to build truly a championship level golf course. Not only that, if you come to the tournament, you see, you know, the facilities, the ability to transport people in and out, the logistics, the size of the property. You know, we talk about it and say Quahala Club is a big stadium. I mean, it's, you know, if you come here, you feel like it's big time professional golf. So when we take a look, and where it really hit me hard was in, you know, 2017, as we looked around to find a place to play, went and looked at a lot of different places all over the country and found a great spot at Eagle Point. But it also reinforces the power and the value of what, you know, the Quahala Club has created here. When you walk on the grounds, when you enter it, the attitude, the process, and what we've tried to do is be a great partner in that and not lose, you know, Quail's ambiance, and at the same time express Wells Fargo as best we can and try to keep ourselves at, you know, at the top of the PGA Tour list for the players to want to play. Plus, you have a great golf course. And, you know, everybody says, well, I have a great golf course. Well, this one's been ranked. It's held a mass, you know, Quail has had a major championship, going to host the President's Cup, you know, continued opportunities down the road for other, you know, big events in the, on the PGA Tour. And I just see it as a great partnership. And the one thing, too, is there's a continual investment in the golf course, and there's a continual investment in what I would say is excellence around the golf course, whether it be the driving range or the clubhouse, et cetera. And the players feel it, and when they come here, they know and they feel that hospitality and they feel the strength of what's going on at Quahala Club.
I ought to think about questions that. Kendall Allen is with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. It was much different than what's going on in Dallas a couple of years ago, and thank you for referencing the move to Eagle Point for a year when we hosted the PGA at Quahala Club, and forgive me for using the pronoun we, but I think we all feel possessive about the tournament here in town. But obviously you were consulted on this move. Were there, and we don't need to get into specifics, but it just seemed to me that decision was interesting to go to Wilmington as opposed to seeking out another venue in the Charlotte area or even in the Raleigh-Durham area. Were there others considered? And what really was the thing that won you guys, Wells Fargo as a sponsor, over to going down to Wilmington for a year?
So the beautiful part about this was I was actually involved in all of it from the get-go. So when the opportunity came up for us to renew, we had to find, you know, a place to play because we knew the 2017 PGA Championship was coming to Quail. And we are a big supporter of that having happened, that we think that's a great thing for Charlotte and a great thing for Quail Hollow Club. It did create a challenge for us. So we then began sat down and say, okay, with the tour, you know, what places have you been before that were successful that you're not at now you'd like to be? We have to look at agronomy, right? Our time in the schedule didn't change. So we couldn't have played in Minnesota or we couldn't have played in upstate New York. So we basically had to be, you know, D.C. or below. You know, we looked at, you know, out west. We took a look all the way in San Francisco.
Wow.
Since Wells Fargo was headquartered there. We looked at Atlanta. We looked at, you know, some other spots. We looked at Raleigh-Durham and looked at, you know, what was kind of going on. If you recall, too, we also had at that point in time, you know, Kiowa was doing some things. I mean, there was a lot of tournaments that were kind of rolling around from that standpoint. So you start thinking about, you know, the corporate hospitality dollars and all that. The reason you kind of wouldn't keep it in a Charlotte is you're kind of competing for, you know, the same company in a budget year to pay for the, you know, going to the Wells Fargo Championship and the PGA Championship. And they would most likely have to make a decision on their hospitality dollars from that standpoint. So we wanted to go to a place where we thought we could do something different. An important piece of having a PGA Tour event is it's not real easy on your golf course. It's pretty tough to have all the action, the activity, the conditioning, the things that go on with the PGA Tour event. We just so happened at Eagle Point with Bobby Long, who actually is very active and involved in the Greensboro tournament, was kind of the Johnny Harris of Eagle Point.
Right.
And he understands and knows what happens when a PGA Tour event hits your property. And so he was a great partner for us, and they were a great partner for us. And we ran an extremely successful event down there. And, you know, Wilmington was wonderful. And as we looked at it at that point in time, we couldn't find anywhere we liked better. And we did have an emphasis at that moment of trying to stay in the Carolinas. And so, you know, Eagle Point gave us the best opportunity. It's the first event that had been in eastern North Carolina for quite some time. And we thought we could entertain and host there and have a different feel for the Wells Fargo Championship. And it did. And the golf course was spectacular. You know, Brian Harmon won the event with a 35-foot putt. He's a friend of mine that he should have never made, but we're proud of him for doing it. And, you know, we had a really great time. Dustin Johnson played. We had a great feel. John Rahm was there. It was one of his first times he played in the U.S. And just a, you know, phenomenal experience. But as we looked at 2021, you know, we said, okay, what do we want to do differently this time? And a large piece of it was, you know, exposure and trying to put our brand of the golf tournament elsewhere in the country.
Kendall Lally's with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking that in. Let's get back to Dallas. You have a tournament that was decades-long success story, raised a ton of charitable dollars, and I think this is important. It moves. It's almost a complete misfire on a lot of levels from the word go. Some of it was weather-related and out of their control, but, you know, ultimately, you know, it just didn't work out. Who makes the call on moving the venue again, and is this a real special dance between tournament organizers and a sponsor on this sales pitch since you just sold them on a move 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think that you're probably talking to some folks who, you know, got their hat in their hand saying, we think this is a good idea. We took a risk on it, you know, and for whatever reason. And, you know, the number one thing I can't control is Mother Nature, and she is a tough partner. And if she decides you're not going to play, you're in serious trouble. And so, you know, they did get hammered pretty heavily from the transitions and the changes, and, you know, that's an unfortunate outcome. You know, as we talked about, and I can say largely what we did here, you know, in 2017, as we had a chance to move, you know, we came back here in 2018 with a renewed look at our golf course. And I wonder sometimes we would have been kind of status quo if we hadn't been forced into the move, if we hadn't had the opportunity to experience the PGA Championship at Quail. What we learned from moving to Eagle Point and looking at other golf courses made it better for us when we came back here and, quite frankly, re-energized our tournament. Our last 2 years have been the two best years we've had since the tournament began. And so we've been extremely excited about it. But that move for us was a reminder of how good we had it and a reminder of how good we could make it if we, you know, opened our eyes and, quite frankly, didn't get, you know, a rinse-repeat kind of program that we're going to try to just do the same thing. We're constantly talking about ways to improve it and upscale it so that, you know, the patrons that come enjoy it, the players are getting a good experience. and that the folks that we host, you know, see something different so that it's not. So I wonder if, you know, and this is strictly speculation, I wonder if in Dallas, you know, they look at it, they've had a couple of sponsors over the years, you know, let's go try something new. Maybe this is how we, you know, we juice it up and get some re-energy back in the tournament. And obviously, I think you would have to say that the move back is saying, okay, didn't quite go the way we wanted it to, and, you know, we need to revisit where we are and see if we can make it, you know, better again at the location where it was.
Let's keep heading down the speculation road. AT&T is a big-time sponsor on the PGA Tour, multiple events. The Tour has to be concerned about any damage to that relationship that this kind of thing has caused. Would you think that at some point they would step in between tournament and sponsor on this?
Yeah, they would still be a driving force. I mean, at the end of the day, they control the golf. You know, we choose the golf course and all that, but if they were having golf issues, the Tour would be a driving force and saying, this doesn't work. You know, when I looked at tournaments as an example, just to give you, golf courses, for the tournament, you know, the Tour had to come in and say yes or no. And with all, it's kind of funny because there's some courses that they came into and immediately went, nope, won't work, logistics. One of the things that, you know, you think about when you're looking at a great golf course or you're looking at a golf course is the golf course may be great, but the clubhouse won't work. Ingress and egress won't work. If you got to evacuate immediate for medical, won't work. I mean, it's logistically as important as it is having a great golf course. I think when they went to, you know, the speculation would be they went to Trinity. They probably thought they had all that figured out. And, you know, people didn't show up, and it didn't feel as good as maybe it did before. And so the Tour would be a driver because, you know, they are responsible for providing the product of golf. And if it's not working for that, or if the players are complaining, or if, you know, the sponsors or quite frankly the host organizations like we have here with our Champions for Education, if it's not a successful event, you know, after a while you can't keep running it. And if, you know, if you're getting hit in the pocketbook, pretty important you figure out how to make sure that, you know, you're doing what you want to do, because you want to be good for charity and you want to be good for the community. And to do that, you got to have the strength and the staying power to be able to be successful.
Get you out of here on this. Kendall Alley is with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. Realistically, to do a move like this, how much time is needed? In other words, to do it right, how long was this latest move in the works before it became public knowledge a few weeks ago?
So we had to have it in place. We had to have a place to play before we could renew our contract that we announced last year. And so part of the process was to get that in place. It took about a year working through and looking at locations and identifying places and looking at them and talking to the leadership there and the energy and the excitement. So I would say we were into 2017. Coming out of that, we began talking about, once the President's Cup was announced to be here, you know, what would we do if we renewed in 2019 last year? And so what would we do in 2021? So we really started working on it in 18, and in 19 we had it solidified so that we could go ahead and sign the contract. You know, I laughingly tell people that the number one thing you do have to have to be able to have a golf tournament is you got to have a place to play. And if you don't have a place to play, that makes it kind of tough. And so we got our place to play intact at TPC Potomac at the Avenel Farms up in D.C. It has hosted events before. And, you know, as part of the PGA Tour's rotation in history, and D.C. is a supermarket for golf. And, you know, Quicken Loans took theirs to their headquarters city of Detroit. And so it left an opening. And quite frankly, the previous tournaments in D.C. were in July, which was a very hot and difficult time to have it up there. We'll be there the first week of May. And we think that'll be a wonderful time to be there, and we think it'll help expose Wells Fargo, and it'll give Quail Hollow the opportunity to get prepared to be the best host for the President's Cup that it can be in September and October of 2021. So I think for everybody it works pretty well. So we realistically have worked on this probably since the end of 2017, if I think back on it, and we got it solidified in 19, and now just put it in perspective, for the 2021 tournament this past month, we kicked off our president's advisory group up there to help us be successful. So we're over a year out and we're already working it.
Great info there from Kendall Alley with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship. Up next, with the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am looming next week, one of that tournament's stalwart participants, country music superstar Clay Walker, takes Dead Aim at his adventures in that event and more, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Mm-hmm. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am is next week, and one of the regulars at that event is my old friend, golf nut, and country music superstar, Clay Walker. Clay, I've been wanting to talk to you on this show for some time, as I don't remember ever knowing you when you were not looking to get out of talking to me so you had time to hit balls before you teed off. When did you get started in the game? Did you play growing up in Vidor?
No, I didn't play golf. I was poor. You know, I mean, I think golf was a rich man's sport. You know, so I never got a chance to really play or have learning. You know, my high school didn't offer it for one thing. I played football, and you know, I eat, breathe, and slept football since I was in sixth grade, and so that's all I really. The only sport I really liked. And later on, you know, I was on the road, and I guess my road manager at the time played a little golf and pulled out a club, and I thought, well, this can't be that hard. It's a stick and ball, you know. I mean, golly, I grew up on a ranch and walking through the woods hunting and picked up many a stick. You know, not gonna be any problem. And the first time I swung, I missed the ball, and I was like, ruh-roh. this might be a challenge.
So, how long did it take before you were addicted to trying to conquer the game?
About one round.
I got you early. Clay, you've got three sons. Now, obviously, the youngest is 16 months. He doesn't play, but you've got a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old. Do either of them play yet?
Yeah, all my kids play golf. And you know, the way, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to teach them, or if you even need to teach them, but just expose them to it. And, you know, what my kids like to do is go get in the sand traps or bunkers and just play in the sand. And I'm like, hey, this works out great. I've got three of them. And my daughter's right in there, too. You know, I got a 10-year-old boy, Will. Got a 9-year-old daughter, Mary Elizabeth. And then Eli is 5. And Ezra's 16 months, sorry. But the three older ones get in the trap and just play like crazy. And I'll be just chipping. I'm like, this is working out great for me. If this is babysitting, I'll do it all day.
Clay Walker is our guest taking Dead Aim. True or false, country singers will definitely route their touring schedule based on the time of year, climate, and playing golf year-round.
100% true.
If it's snowing in January, you'd be stunned how many people are playing Arizona that time of year.
Because of this, Charlie, you know, think about this for a minute, all right? You ride this tube. You know, a bus is a tube.
Yes.
And you're on there with, you know, with 10 other guys, and you're like, when you stop, if you don't get off and do something, like this, picture it like this. The stage is a playground. When you see us on stage and you see us happy, we're not faking it. Oh, my God. It is like the biggest rush, the biggest playground ever. And all the musicians love that. I mean, but the other 23 hours, you know, of life are very difficult. So you got to find a pastime. And there's a lot worse places you can be other than a golf course. You know, that's what I tell my wife.
I got to start using that one. You know, with what you do, you've had the opportunity to play all sorts of places. I've got my personal Mount Rushmore of places that mere mortals aren't allowed to play. And I'm going to name them, and you just tell me yes or no if you've been able to get on and play.
Okay.
Seminole.
Yes.
Pine Valley.
No.
I know this one. Cypress Point.
Yes.
Augusta National.
Yes.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, let me throw in a wild card. Oakmont.
Yes.
Oh, I hate you. God almighty. Oh, God.
Now, do you really hate me?
Yeah, I'm starting to. Is there a place that you've been invited to play or asked to play, but because of scheduling or some commitment, you've had to turn down and then you pouted all the way to the gig?
Pine Valley.
You've had the opportunity and you had to walk away?
Yes.
Did you really consider firing the SOB who did your schedule so you couldn't go to Pine Valley? Because I would.
Yes.
Country singer Clay Walker is our guest taking that aim. We'll get into your fantastic event in a second. But one place that I do get to see you play every year, and I'm so jealous, is the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. How many years have you done that now?
20-something.
Oh, my God. I didn't know you'd played that many. Wow.
Yeah, I think Huey Lewis is the only one that's been longer than me, I think. pretty sure of that.
Clay, which was more nerve-wracking, the first time you met George Strait or the first time you met Clint Eastwood at Pebble?
Oh, man, I've never been asked that question, but both valid. I don't know. I can tell you that George immediately, you know, took off the intimidating factor by making me feel comfortable. I just had my song out, What's It to You, and it had, I think it had gone number one. And I did my first show with him, I think, in Atlanta at the Omni. And he invited me on the bus, and my knees were shaking, you know, before I went on. He said, "Man, I really like your new song." You know, and he was saying the words, but I wasn't hearing the words. It was one of those surreal moments. But he put you at ease real quick. Clint Eastwood, not so much.
I've never been. Yeah. The man's 90 years old and he's Dirty Harry.
I've never been at ease around him. I'll be honest. He's probably the only celebrity that I've ever been around that I am intimidated. I'll be honest.
Wow.
And I think it's like that with everybody. You know, he golfed with, I think he played golf with Toby Keith. Toby Keith's a pretty big old boy, you know, and they were riding in the cart together, and Clint looked at Toby and said, "Quit staring at me." And he got out of the car and he was going to hit a ball. That ought to tell you something about Clint Eastwood. I think he can still whoop a man's butt. I think he might take a swing. But he's a pretty tall guy. He's like 6'4" or 5". But he's not mean. He's just intimidating, you know. But I love playing the AT&T, of course. I got to brag a little bit here. I won the celebrity shootout the last 2 years in a row, and I won the $1 million hole last year where you hit a ball up to the seventh green, and closest to the pin, they have a playoff. And so I played against, you know, all the athletes like Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, Alex Smith, Larry Fitzgerald. And it came down to a playoff between me and Larry Fitzgerald, and it was on CBS, you know, it was on TV. And I could see Larry Fitzgerald's vein in his neck throbbing. I thought, he is fixing to airmail this. He was so jacked up. He hits it. It looks like it's going to fly right in the hole, and it flew the entire green. And I thought, okay, all I got to do is get it on the green. No pressure. So I hit it up there and win $50,000 for a charity. So it was great.
Well, just a little FYI for you. That means that I've had the winner of that shootout for the last 3 years on this show in the last 2 months, because Colt Ford was on, and he won 2 years ago and then won this year, and now you've won. So I've got that event absolutely covered. Hey, take me inside for a second. First off, how does one get invited to be a celebrity at the AT&T?
Ancient Chinese secret.
All right, we will not reveal that secret. How about this one? This one's easier. Who have been some of your partners over the years?
I've had some great ones. I've had Webb Simpson. I've had Aaron Baddeley. I've had Steve Elkington. Jeff Maggard. Golly, the Walrus. It's been so many. It's been so fun, you know. But I really have enjoyed the last few years. I played with this young player named Kelly Kraft.
Yeah.
And he and Jordan Spieth are great, great friends. And so I've played some rounds with those guys, practice rounds. And Jordan is the coolest. I'll tell you something. For someone his age, I mean, you know, he's in his early 20s. He is a man. And I wish I had that much sense when I was his age. But he is really a really heartfelt guy. And showed me some things, you know, around the greens, unsolicited, you know, just if he would see something, he'd come over and say, "Hey, why don't you try this?" And it worked, you know. So the friendships that are formed, you know, or can be formed around golf are lifelong most of the time, because you can play the sport, you know, until you die. And you can be pretty decent at it, you know, even up in age. So I think that it's a game that men and women alike, you know, they see that there's a long future in it, so it's worth investing in.
How many times have you made the cut?
That's another story. I'm not happy about that, but only once out of 20-something years, you know, 22 years.
Well, at least you're not Jack Lemmon. I mean, you made the cut, man.
No, but I'll tell you what was so cool about it. I made it the year I met my wife, and I said, "Okay, you're the one."
Oh, that's classic.
I kiss her under that umbrella all the time. I'll pick that umbrella up when we walk into the garage. I'll pick it up. I'll say, look at this, sweetheart. You're my lucky charm.
Country music superstar Clay Walker is our guest taking Dead Aim. We talked about Clint. Other than him, who is one celebrity? And I mean, it's kind of interesting to me because there's so many celebrities there, but who's the one celebrity that you met or came into contact with that you went, you couldn't wait to get home and say, oh, I met this guy?
Bill Murray, by far.
Was he cool?
Bill Murray is the funniest and the coolest. We went and had drinks afterwards. We played. Well, actually, one year, like, I've won the celebrity shootout, I think, four times. And once with Michael Bolton, once with Bill Murray, then with Carlton off of Fresh Prince.
Oh, Alfonso Ribeiro, yeah.
This year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alfonso Ribeiro. So I've won it four times, and Bill Murray was by far the funnest. And we went to, we played a practice round together. We had some lunch together, and it's painful. It hurts to be around him. You laugh so hard. Literally, I felt like I broke a rib when I got done with lunch with him. I couldn't hardly take it. And guy, he has a sweet swing there. I mean, he's got a really beautiful fluid swing. So, but all the celebrities there, I will tell you, you know, this is a known thing. They don't care who you are. They don't care how much money you've made. They don't care how famous you are. You step out of line there, you're never coming back. and that, I think that comes from the man down, and his name's Clint Eastwood.
Respond to this statement. All singers want to be athletes, and all athletes want to be singers.
They can't.
Look for him next week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, my old friend, golf nut, and country music superstar, Clay Walker. I'd also like to thank Kendall Alley with Wells Fargo and the Wells Fargo Championship, and Ryan Ballingy of GolfNewsNet.com for hanging out with us today. A reminder, if you're just joining us and catching the last little bit of the show, wondering what all we've covered, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, B-Pod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game. Weather-wise, believe it or not, I don't think we're going to have to deal with the rain in the Carolinas this weekend. Maybe a little chilly at times, but still plenty of opportunity for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And hey, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.